Welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob, Scott, and Becky all enjoy Chateau Saint-Michel Canoe Ridge Estate Merlot from Horse Heaven Hills in Washington. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault. Welcome, everybody, to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and tonight I am joined by Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver.
Good evening, folks, and I just have one thing to say. Normally, I can do that.
Normally. It's never happened to you before. It's the first time.
It doesn't usually take me 8 times, though.
Like, I mean, you've been tired recently. You've been under a lot of stress. It's just, very much. It happens to all men, I've been told.
Normally, it doesn't take 8 times like it just took you.
Okay. Well, anyway. Also on tonight's show, covered in a blanket, is the Triple B.
Good evening.
She's cozy. Yeah.
She is cozy.
It's cold down here.
It is. It's because it's the cellar. Regardless, folks, tonight we are following up on a previous episode, sort of.
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
Previous episode, we did Rutherford Hill Napa Valley Merlot, and that was a very good wine, Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
We enjoyed it quite a bit, and we considered it classical California Merlot, even if we're wrong. In our opinion, it was.
Well, I think
typical.
Just to say typical, classic, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be interesting. We don't often get an opportunity to do something where we can have kind of a immediate comparison point.
And so that's what we've done. Tonight, we're switching up. Not really. And we're going into Washington. And we're going to be trying a single vineyard selection from Chateau Saint-Michel.
Hmm.
Their Canoe Ridge Estate Merlot from Horse Heaven Hills.
We love Horse Heaven Hills.
Now, you heard me say single single vineyard, yes. You're going, wow, Rob. That's fantastic. You have a single vineyard on the show. Wow, it must be expensive. No, it isn't. It's about $27.
Yeah.
The reason is Canoe Ridge Estate, the vineyard, is 559 acres. So, it's a big fucking vineyard.
Yeah, it is.
So it's not. This isn't the only winery that pulls from Canoe Ridge Estates. So when we say single vineyard, sometimes that means a 20-acre elite little patch where they squeeze out, you know, 400 cases.
Like the workhorse acreage that provides for.
Yeah. And Canoe Ridge is one. What's the other one? I have it, actually. They do Canoe Ridge and I have the other one. I just can't recall what it is right off the hand.
Were you referring to Canoe Ridge, or alternately, it's known as a bit of Europe on the Columbia?
Oh, very
Do they call themselves
nice.
That? You could read that. I realized once I printed
Cold
it
Creek.
Off.
I think you're
Cold Creek,
Cold
yes.
Creek.
I realized it's horrendously very small. You have good vision.
No, that's what it says.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying. I was remarking on how small the type
is. I have my glasses on.
Oh, good. I need some glasses.
They do a single vineyard, Horse Heaven Vineyard.
Yes.
Very original.
If you look at their line, you start off with just their base Columbia. It's from anywhere. Then they go up into their Indian Wells Horse Heaven series. And you think of Horse Heaven is larger, a larger area, but it's smaller AVA than Columbia in general. And now we're shrinking down into a single vineyard within Horse Heaven. And I think
down to Europe on the Columbia.
Whatever the fuck that's supposed to mean. So tonight we're going to be looking at something. We're going to say, how does this compare to a Napa Valley traditionalist?
Hmm.
Does this go down the jazzy route, or is it a, term you just said? A European what?
I was yawning.
Europe on the Columbia.
A Europe on the Columbia.
A bit. A bit of Europe on the Columbia.
Just a bit. Is it a bit like 2% European?
Or one of our bad attempts at humor. Bits.
Yes. Well, no. That's
or is it 2 bits?
Normally. $2 chuck, perhaps.
$2 chuck?
Yeah.
Well, that's 2 bits. 2 bits, 50 cents.
In reality, it was going to be this or a rosé roundup. So I didn't have the strength for that.
I don't either. I think I'm getting like a bit of a headache. And if I come down and you had five rosés on the table, I would have puked and gone back upstairs.
That's a lot of rosés. I like to do those. I just haven't liked to do them recently. Maybe I like to do those when we just have a bunch of shit in there.
When did you like to do rosés?
No, not rosés. Just never. Freak episodes.
This is going to be coming to you all later, but tonight is the Oscars. And that would have been very fitting for the Oscars.
Rosé?
Yeah.
Really?
I feel like it's like... whatever.
I am whatever about the Oscars, but yeah.
I'm fine drinking this, but I am really upset because I had another mystery wine.
Oh.
And Rob is too afraid.
I'm terrified. I don't want to do another sledgehammer. I don't know what... See, I thought I knew, and now I don't, what she was thinking, and it's a little spooky. Next week, you may do it. I don't know why.
Are you saying you may, like, you're giving me permission?
That's what it sounds like.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Very misogynistic.
Okay.
Oh, by the way.
Then I won't go with what I was thinking of, and I'll pick another doozy.
Okay.
Oh.
Great.
You just got the stink eye.
That's all right. You know, onto the sexism of wine. I did notice Hess. You know the winery Hess, right?
Yes.
And they have wines that are based on lion names. So they like have the lion tamer or whatever. Do you know what they call their really nice Chardonnay?
I don't.
The lioness.
Huh. You know, back to
sexism. I'm just saying.
You know, back to sexism
point
and wine.
Match Becky.
I do not own
Rob,
Hess.
The wine guy speaks. Yes.
Uh-huh. Nevertheless. Whatever.
They're dead to me.
Hess? Uh-huh. I thought that was a little bit like... Huh?
He's the one being sexist. Though.
Now that I've pointed it out, you see it everywhere, don't you? You're going to start seeing it all the time.
Around Scott a lot. Of course I see it all the time.
Sexism in wine.
Could be.
I think it's just...
That's a shitty name, though. Just like to point that
honestly,
out.
Honestly, sexism. It's probably no more or no less prevalent in wine than it is everywhere else in our society.
I don't know.
Fair enough?
Yes, us. Let's take a break before we get into another
PSA
by Scott.
Well, he probably thinks I have nothing important to say, so he'll go.
He did try to cut you off.
It's fine.
Pursing your lips to speak.
It's all fine.
I'm trying to cut him off.
Just wait.
I'm trying to head him off with the past.
Sure. Just wait till I have a chance to do mystery wine again. Just wait.
Look, I haven't given your opinion yet. So
I'll bring you a barefoot medley. You think five rosés is bad? Wait till we have five barefoots.
Remember, honor and obey. Yes.
Just puked again.
Anyway, folks, we're going to take a break and be right back here on the Wine Vault.
Folks, there are many ways to enjoy the Wine Vault. The first way is on iTunes. Look for the Wine Vault. Subscribe. Give us 5 stars. Beyond that, we are on Facebook at thewinevault.rs. We are on Twitter at winevaultpodcast. And our website is winevault.org. You can also drop us a line at winevault@outlook.com. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Craig Walters, Allstate Insurance, at 740-862-4585. For auto, home, or life, give Craig a call. We'll be right back on the Wine Vault.
And we're back, folks. So the Chateau Saint Michel Canoe Ridge Estate Merlot, and this is the 13 vintage. This wine does have many reviews, many reviews. Who at this table would like to read the reviews? Triple B, would
I have
you like
one
to?
I'd like to read.
Oh, you. Other than there's one that you can't. But
because why?
Because I read it. I'll read it first if you'd like.
Would you like me to read it?
No.
Okay. You can go ahead, please.
Just read it and get it over with.
What? Old James Suckling? Yes, hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. James Suckling, I'm fantastic. I did a review and I provided this wine. It's a lovely wine. 90 of my points. I said an array of right. I can't read this fucking small print. Dumbass Rob. Oh, yes. An array of ripe... bright plums and berries with a good serving of toasty and spicy oak. Acidity kicks in through the finish. An easygoing, approachable style. Yes.
That was lovely.
It was.
Thanks, Robert James. Parker.
Oh, yes.
Gave it a 91.
Bobby.
Are we drinking the 13?
Yes.
Oh. An impressive wine is the 2013 Merlot Canoe Ridge Estate. There's 5% Cabernet Sauvignon and the in the blend, and it spent 16 months in 59% new French and American oak. It's extremely precise.
Mm-hmm.
Possessing first-rate aromatics of plums, currants, licorice, and damp earth, this medium to full-bodied, supple, charming Merlot has outstanding purity and surprising mid-palate density. It's a sexy wine to drink over the coming 4 to 5 years.
It's a sexy wine.
Well, we're 7 years.
No, no, no. They meant from release.
Yeah, this 14's, I think, current vintage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's from release. Yes.
I forgot the Wine Spectator. This is exciting. Mm. Broad and spicy with pepper and clove overtones to the rich blueberry and currant fruit coming together harmoniously against softly nubby tannins on the expressive finish. Mm-hmm. Drink now through 2022.
What was the review score?
92.
That's a lot of points.
Mm-hmm. Nubby tannins.
That's a stupid...
don't know that we've heard that one before. Yeah.
The enthusiast said they gave it a 91, blah, 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 but they said the flavors are pitch black.
Interesting. Pitch black flavors. What are the... Showing warmth of the... Okay. What's the enthusiast? I think I wrote down the...
Did they give it 2 scores?
No, I think that actually was the 14, my mistake. 14 was a step down.
Mm. Well, there's a 91 and an 88. Which one's right?
91.
Nubby tannins, by the way. Nubby is stubby or lumpy. And if you Google nubby, you're going to get some videos, including Nubby the Two-Legged Boxer Steals His Dad's Heart.
I was extremely afraid where you were going with that.
Yes, because I'm sure you've heard the term that's stumpy before. The decanter
stubby.
Also. They got into wine reviewing business here. Business. And they did not give it 97 of their points. They gave it 90, a very modest score from decanter. But then again,
they were all over the world on their review.
They're British.
And so did you read it?
I have not.
Fresh, appealing nose of ripe black cherry. Cream, cinnamon, licorice, mint, cedar, tobacco, and palate with long length.
And palate with long length. Very, very eloquently said.
It looks like they just smashed on their keyboard.
A cat.
It's a very compressed review. That's
it's like that gif of the cat smacking the keyboard.
Yeah,
that was them.
The brain trust.
Meow, 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 meow. Yes, please, the decanter. Please. Well, they would naturally hate this wine because it's not European. Mm-hmm. Even though it does have
it's American.
A bit of European on the Colombian. Yes. So. And as Becky said, it's 95.5, predominantly Merlot, which is a twinkle of
little
Cabernet.
Star, how I wonder where you are.
So in the glass, it's very dark.
Pitch black.
It is dense.
It is dense looking. More... A touch of crimson, less purple.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would agree. It's really pretty, though.
Let's see how I'm calling this film. 14 and a half. Almost.
When you swirl it in the glass, it's like a rusty...
Yeah.
...to it.
Well, even though it is a fairly late release kind of wine where they're holding it, it still does show a little bit of maturity in the glass. And the Spectator said it was drink now through 2022, so they're not seeing a long-term ager. It's kind of like North Star in that
regard.
Why
are they holding on to it themselves?
Because they consider it a premium-level wine for them, and they're probably, additional oak aging-y, where you're...
Aging-ing.
Aging.
I think Rutherford...
Having a stroke.
You know, we're comparing this in theory to the Rutherford Hills we did recently, and they... Similarly aged at 16 to 18 months off
something
the top
like,
of my head.
Yeah, it was 16 to 18. Yeah, 16, I think. They have other levels below that are really for quick drinking. That's what, if you look at the...
What are they doing with it the rest of the time?
They're in casks. They're in the barrel. then they do some bottle aging as well. So it's just held back in their whatever they have. Some like Rutherford Hill have caves. Well, I don't know if they have caves, but in their aging area. So just like you would.
Right, but I'm just asking why.
To give it maturity, depth,
to try character. To get more money out of it?
No.
Well, why wouldn't you sell it? That's what I'm asking. Why would you hold it instead of selling it and telling people to age it? Because you don't think they would?
I think that's
part of it. Because they want it to be to a certain point at a certain drinking style before it's released. That's what you see with Crayons, anything that's being held for a period of time. Yeah, it's drinkable, but it's not where they want it to be for their standards. So that's
because it would be very expensive to store wine for years. That's where I'm headed with that. Well, it's just very expensive, and I'm wondering.
Well, that's where your money is going on a lot of these wines. I mean, think about what is it? Like Heights is what is their current vintage? 13.
Sounds right.
Yeah, I mean, because it's held back, and they're tending to their flock, if anything, or their stock. And once again, how many bottles do they make?
I think about every so often there will be like a fire or some kind of disaster, like at the bourbon, all those bourbon barrels caught on fire.
Yeah.
I just, my mind went there. Like you're holding on to it, but like the insurance that you would have to have on that.
Well, one thing though, wine storage is far more stable than bourbon storage. I mean, you've been in there. Those are colder, damper conditions. I mean, bourbon, like those ones that caught on fire, they were just being dumb. But you think about
still
this, though.
Still a lot of money.
The what they're holding back, though, I don't know what the case production is, but this isn't a 200,000 case production.
Right.
So say it's more in the 5 to 15,000. Mm-hmm. I'm just guessing. That's still a lot.
It's still a lot, manageable. And you're holding it for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So in theory, you're holding your right now. They might have their 13, 14, you know, 15, 16, 17. Mm-hmm. That adds up quickly.
Yeah.
It's, I think Rob touched on this briefly, but you see Spanish wines that are not expensive that they're going to be aged in a similar process.
This is also a slower sell. I mean, you know, you're not going to have it. A store is not going to go through 5 cases a week of this stuff. They just don't. So, also, there's a little bit of that where it's in the marketplace, too. So the 13 is still on the shelves, but the 14 is a current vintage. You're going to find, and I bet you might even run into some 12 occasionally in certain stores. I wouldn't necessarily buy it because that's a little bit long on the shelf. But like Scott, you bought this on closeout because they're trying to get it off to get to the 14. And you bought it at $17.99.
And that's hopefully that's going to turn out to be a great price. And
I think so. Just,
but again, we talk about this all the time, and we mentioned this on the Rutherford Hill. You can look for these little deals where you get, you know, say a $30 bottle of wine in the teens.
Oh yeah.
So if you're uncomfortable spending more wine, this is an opportunity to do that. And, you know, Rob and I will text back and forth. What do you think about that? Or use the wine.com app. You can take a picture of the label. It'll give you some info on the wine.
Yep.
And
assuming you can get reception in the store. I can't get in a Giant Eagle, but still.
Meyer.
I can get reception in Meyer. I can't in the Giant Eagle for some reason.
Did you log into their Wi-Fi?
No, I never have.
Yeah,
maybe I should do that.
Might be reason. Okay. I can't get any service.
Now I know. So the wine. Let's go in there.
Can use the Wi-Fi to do the Google.
The Wi-Fi?
The Googles.
But it's an unsecured network.
Oh, no. Someone could look at all my porn pics that I have on my phone.
Steal your ideas for the show by your wine.com usage.
I always tap those. I put those in file notes. Yes, all of my wine show. Wine wars could be in there to just try to steal my trade secrets.
It's certainly a bigger nose.
Is it?
It's not calm. It's not muted.
I don't actually think it's all that expressive on the nose.
Oh, I would have actually said the word I would use is like broody. Like it's not super strong, hit you over the nose, but it feels like there's a lot in there.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a peppery, like the oak is a little bit of a like spicy, peppery, oaky nose, but in not in a like bash you over the head. It's just in there.
You know what I'm picking up? The mint.
Well, there's definitely, I do agree, there's mint. There's also a slight bit of Well, licorice. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go cassis. It's a little sharper than that.
Which I think that was the Venice review.
Yeah. It's not blackberry. Is it? It's a borderline blueberry. And there's just like a little bit of a, just a sneak bit of cherry. Just a little sweet cherry that just pops in for a brief second.
There's with the mint, there's also something, a sharper herbaceousness.
There is something there. What is it? Milkweed.
I was going to say something along that line, like thistle, something like that.
Yeah.
This is a nice nose.
Triple B is like,
I will say, it also, the oak is almost like a cedary smell to it. And it's very nice.
There's an, it just has, that's kind of like the glue that, that holds
it's
it.
Very nice.
I love this nose.
Yeah.
It's not something, though, that wafts 5 feet away from the glass.
It's not humongous, but you gotta, it's pull not a muted nose. Said it was, it's a nice,
broody.
I would suggest that Triple B's characterization of the broodiness is a little more apt.
I think you're just trying to make up points that you lost earlier with your sexist views.
No, no. Why bother? I'm going to wash all that away eventually. So what's the difference? Here we go. And I haven't started drinking yet.
He's a bad man.
I'm going to drink.
I know.
I'm so hopeful of this wine. One, we espouse Horse Heaven Hills, how much we love it. And repeatedly we've said, hey, if it's Horse Heaven Hills, you can't go wrong. Wine guy's got a look on his face. It's a half smile. He's chewing. He's nodding.
That's good. You know what I like the most?
Mm.
In the mid palate, there is a... almost like a meaty sausage note to it. Oh.
One of the reviewers commented on the mid palate. Now I can't find it. What did it say?
I'm just going to say, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get nubby tannins. Those are nice, chewy tannins.
Mm-hmm. It's jazzier than Rutherford Hills, but... it isn't one of these things that I've been complaining about.
Not in a manipulated way.
No. The mid-palate, the way the oak comes through and then extends into the tannin, that is a little bit jazzy, but it's not bad. It's certainly, because there's plenty of brawn there. I mean, it's a brawny wine.
Well, and it's, you know, the jazzy style that you've ranted about recently is... it's a manipulated thing. It's a stylistic manipulation that is intended to sell wine. And listen, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just one guy is tired of that style of wine. This is jazzy, but in a more natural way.
Mm-hmm. One of the reviews talked about there was a bit of a cough medicine note in it, and that is true.
That's the jazzy quasi medicinal, but it's not
that
bad.
That was even the wine enthusiast of all people. No, it isn't. It's not unappealing, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but it is that was a part of a review that I thought was pretty spot on.
That's the 14 though.
Well, this has it.
Still. I know.
And it's kind of, is it medicinal, or is it just a cassis, licorice, anise thing that's kind of muddled a little bit?
In the 14, though, which is lesser than the 13, it might be a little bit more medicinal. I can see how in a different year it could go wrong. It doesn't go wrong here.
It's not going wrong.
And perhaps the 14 would, with another year like this has had, do better. Do you notice the tobacco on the finish?
Yeah.
When it all washes away, there's tobacco.
And not...
long finish, by the way.
But the tobacco is not that real pungent tobacco. It's that softer tobacco.
Tobacco leaf.
Yeah, it's really nice. What about the fruit?
You know what this reminds me of? And I mean this, and I like this wine a lot. I will score it high. But it reminds me of like something that somebody, because it is kind of like brambly, it's pretty deep, it's got a little bit of like the woodsiness in it.
Yeah.
It reminds me of something that someone like made in a cauldron and just threw a bunch of like leaves and sticks in, because it has so much of that flavor and expression. It is very good. I do not mean that as an insult, but it has that. Doesn't it taste like that? Like some kind of like it, something someone conjured up.
It tastes like a flannel shirt.
It's very good.
Yeah, well, but when I think of throwing sticks and leaves in a cauldron,
I know, but it just has
that as a positive review.
I know what you
mean. I mean that as a compliment. Well, it really does.
It has these, and not just one, but multiple layers of earthy characteristics.
Yes.
They are, and they're not typical of the earthiness we normally see, because we normally can a Pinot earthiness. And this is a Merlot earthiness. It's the terroir that's driving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I believe it's all volcanic soils.
Yeah, volcanic soils.
So you're finding normally that will cause a little more acidity. Mm-hmm. I'm not noticing that. Although the finish, the way it has its structure, it's coming through a little bit in that regard. But it is terroir driven. I don't know how specific you can get in almost 600 acres, but still, they're doing something there. It's also, I think, their oaking is very, very well done.
Yeah. It's extremely intentional.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, no, it is very well done. It just tastes like you're in a cabin in the woods, and it's very, very good.
In fall, mm-hmm. with a fire going. Mm-hmm. This would be wonderful if you're sitting in front of a fireplace. It's just wafting just a little bit, and you're just sitting there enjoying yourself, wearing a flannel shirt, of course. On a cold night, yes, that's what this is. Hearty, like a bowl of chili.
I don't get to wear flannel shirts. My wife steals mine.
Yeah.
They don't stay in my closet.
What about mock turtlenecks?
I don't think I have any mock turtlenecks currently. I think I just have turtlenecks.
How do you go out in public without a mock turtleneck?
Well,
a dickie.
That's not a mock turtleneck.
I know, it's beyond that. It's a
okay. I was gonna say it's like a half one. It doesn't have a bottom.
It's a rag.
You know who's wearing dickies?
I know.
And
why did anyone ever wear a dickie? Why did
Charles Woodson?
I used to have one. I had like a green tennis sweater, and then I had a dickie I wore underneath it.
Isn't that not comfortable? Because the sweaters
I think it was
itchy.
Just a lot of clothing. I think that's why people wore them, is because it was just like. A turtleneck and a sweater would make you hot.
Yeah, but you're already... the sweater isn't cool. I mean, I guess...
Does it make you hot or does it make you geeky?
And for a while, turtlenecks were very, very cool and trendy. Like, for girls, when I was, like, in the 90s...
I know.
Girls would wear a turtleneck with, like, a necklace hanging out the top.
Yes, yes.
So you needed to have a turtleneck on underneath basically everything.
That kind of piece of jewelry that was draped over the... neck of the turtleneck.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I remember that book.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty popular
I've
look.
Seen pictures of you from the last 3 or 4 years.
Did you wear
that
too?
No.
Oh.
No. I draped my jewelry over my ears.
Nice.
It worked for me, you know.
Yes. Sexy.
I had really long necklaces.
Didn't you?
Yeah. That's what it worked.
Just a dangling set of pearls. Eh?
No. Never wore a pearl necklace.
You should have.
Wasn't my
Speaking
style.
Of branches, I do believe there's one inside my wine glass.
Is there?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So, the fruit, I think that blueberry pops in there. You mm-hmm. talk about that brambly. It's berry, but there's a little like cherry cordial almost. There's a little kiss of cherry. But the fruit pops right through the front palate quickly. And the mid palate is... long, as well as the finish is. This is a good long finish. 30 seconds?
Yeah.
Easily. Mm-hmm. Easily. Mm.
It's dry, but not incredibly dry. On a Merlot scale, it's dry, as it should be, but it's not this...
Here's a question, though.
Dry.
If you were blind tasting this, the finish would... suggest to me Merlot, mm-hmm. but I don't know that it's a slam dunk of picking that out. The Rutherford Hills was a slam dunk. That's a Merlot. This one, I think you would get it. However, I think you would think it had a little bit more of other things mixing it than it really does.
I'm interested that you said that because I was just getting there mentally as well, where it is not, I would not say this is a full-bodied wine. I would say it's a medium bodied, on its way to full, but I wouldn't say it's a full body.
It's got enough body that, I don't, you know, there's some characteristics in there that you might go, huh, Pinot. But it's too full bodied. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
to be
I wouldn't
Pinot.
Say Pinot. Mm-mm. Honestly.
No, just some of the earthiness, some of the tobacco, some of those things.
Carries
itself
say,
completely different.
I get that.
I can see Rob trying to trick me up with this wine for sure. And I think if I was blind tasting this, I would be like, I'm not for sure what this is because it tastes like a cab, but it's not quite full bodied enough to be a cab in the sense that it has some of that brambliness in it.
Well, I would know that it was Washington.
You would?
Taste of Washington.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
And even though this is Merlot, and you know, normally we talk about some blends or some cabs from Washington. Again, Horse Heaven Hills, home run.
It tastes like a Horse Heaven Hills wine. It's that slight jazziness on the finish is something we see in every single one, whether it be Mercer, whether it be Columbia Crest, whether it be any of these.
H3.
Mm-hmm, H3.
There's just
Indian Wells, North Star.
A certain quality of elements that there's, let's say, five or six things that kind of add up, and this may have four of them. Some of the others may have five of them. Some may have three. But when you put them all together, you go, yeah, that fits the Horse Heaven Hills profile.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting note that you had at the bottom in extremely small font.
Yes, it is.
Is that phylloxera is not an issue here.
No, it's not.
Because they have such cold winters. I thought that was super interesting. So their vines don't have to be crossed with anything. They're just able to be like in their natural state.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yep. Well, I mean, that's why they're a serious growing region as opposed to the other ones, because that's just very complicated when you're doing the other stuff. So,
this is nice.
Here's your question, though. If someone says roast chicken, I will throw a bottle at them. What would you pair this with?
Roast chicken.
Yeah. Because I mean, the flavor profile, obviously it's big enough easily for a nice ribeye. But the flavor profile, I don't know.
I think it could also be paired with, you know, not a steak. What would you pair? So maybe that's, let me take this and add to your question. Non-steak, what would you pair this with?
Well, that's a side, though, Rob. Sautéed mushrooms is what I was thinking.
Well, I was going to think exactly some type of beef dish with mushroom gravy.
Beef bouillon.
Bouillon.
Yeah. I said this last time we had Merlot, because in my mind, this pairs so well with a char of something.
Yeah.
And that's because where, of the finish. Because it's...
So I'm going to take that, and I was thinking before you started speaking, and it just... It's like, oh, great minds. Oh, there was a vibe. Grilled portobello mushrooms.
Oh,
like you'd marinated them.
Sure. That's really good.
Brisket. burnt ends.
Proper burnt ends, not barrel and boar burnt ends, brisket cooked twice.
Yeah.
By the way, folks, that's not burnt ends. If you reheat your brisket... If you reheat your biscuit, son, it's probably burnt. No, taking brisket that's leftover, chopping it up in pieces, cooking it again, that's not burnt ends. I don't care how much you burn them. That's not burnt ends.
You know, also, you could, if you did a filet, but did a red wine reduction with this wine, or a stronger wine, that might be fine.
Ville Marsala.
Oh, yeah. There you go. That's a nice one.
But I think the point here is, you know, some type of earthy, mushroomy dish would go well. Mm-hmm.
But not a ribeye with a potato. Yeah. I don't think so.
Yeah. Oh, I think it would be fine. Because I think the fattiness of a ribeye would be really good with it.
I think you can certainly serve this with steak.
You can. I just think that the way the steak is prepared... Well, the way the steak is presented makes a difference.
Yeah, and I think this I don't want to say it deserves something different than that, but I think you're missing an opportunity to pair it with something that leads you to appreciate the wine a little more.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly what I'm saying. So,
again, we've popularized in our eyes, some different kind of budget and entry priced makers that we like that have either county specific or single vineyard specifics. Chateau Saint Michel.
Oh, they're,
you know, they're fantastic for the price point.
I mean, I don't know about their just their base Columbia stuff, but you know everything else. I mean, it's been a while. I've had their cab not too long ago, but it's not something that you ever really buy. I don't know that I've ever had Chateau Saint Michel's Columbia Valley Merlot. I don't think I have that I can think of.
I haven't either. But you know,
we'd have it on the show, but that's such a boring show.
Typically, you know, if you go to Chateau Saint Michel, their entry price stuff, it's white. That's what they sell a lot of Cab Merlot. They do.
And they sell a lot of Cab.
You know.
But you normally go to Columbia Crest H3 in the same price range because it does better.
But the you know, the Riesling.
Well,
why not? It's not bad.
Well, they all make a pretty good Riesling. I hear Hogue makes a pretty good Riesling.
Mm.
Yes. Triple B does not like Hogue, so.
Well.
I know. Well, folks, we're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back here on The Wine Vault. Hey, everybody. It's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love The Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about The Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on The Wine Vault. And we'll be right back. And we're back, folks. So in tonight's potpourri, I'm going to go around the room, and we're all going to provide the listening audience with either a winery or a varietal that you think is undervalued in some fashion. The Steve Bodie kind of thing. Although, in reality, this would not be something stupid like McManus. Not to say that I think McManus is stupid. We like it.
Are you saying that because I was looking over there?
No, I think you just said McManus was stupid. You did just say that.
No.
I was seriously just looking over there, and I was reading McManus, and I felt like you were trying to take away my ideas.
I was looking at Scott, actually.
Well.
But, no, Steve Bodie is stupid. That's what I'm saying. No, an undervalued, or maybe something that you think people should be drinking more of, regardless. We're going to go around the room. Who would like to go first?
Well.
Who would like to go last? Who would like to go second?
Can I have, like, maybe this much more wine, please?
Oh, yeah. Maybe Chateau.
Notice Scott didn't offer to let me go first.
Well, you can go first. Go first.
I'm not, by all means, Scott, go ahead.
I don't think you want to go first.
No, I know what I'm going to say. Go ahead.
Oh, but what if you'd like to go first, go ahead.
No, by all means.
So, I think we talk about Spanish wines. And I still think they're not necessarily undervalued, but underappreciated. Mm. And so many different varietals, but just a good entry price Tempranillo. It's just hard to beat.
Who's underappreciating that?
I think in general they are.
Yeah.
Any wine store you go to, the Spanish section is extremely small.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, if we're talking about it in that context, that's fair enough.
And not just that context.
That's actually a good context to think of.
But I think for red wine drinkers, which, let's be honest, we promote red wines. We're a bit of a red wine snob.
Not me.
The wine guy. Yes, you are.
Well, yeah.
But, I have a story to tell you after this.
Oh, I want to hear it. Mm. No, let's just roll right into it, and then I'll finish my Tempranillo thought.
So last night, my mom watched the boys, and we went out to Hudson 29.
Nice. Shout out to Sweet Sue for taking on the Dern boys.
So we go out. I think the best dish there, and Rob probably agrees, right?
I would have earlier.
Hudson 29 is a kind of eclectic menu. It's a Cameron Mitchell restaurant in Wheaton Bluff.
It's so good. You could honestly eat anything off the menu, and it would be delicious. But I think the best thing on their menu is their blackened snapper. It is so, you agree.
Yeah,
it's so good.
You've gotten it multiple times, yeah.
Every time we go, I get it.
Yeah, it is.
I don't even really like blackened. Like, that's not how I would normally order.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. But their blackened snapper is just unreal. And they make this, like, horseradish sauce that goes on top. They had just taken it off the grill when they served it to us. It was, like, steaming hot. Perfection. So good.
Mm.
Rob didn't order it.
No.
Because he wanted to drink red wine at the table, and he was not willing to do a red wine with the blackened snapper. So his snobbery... I have a lot of other thoughts about the wine that he chose and the way that Cameron Mitchell stores and serves their wine. But the wine guy chose his second choice entree so that he wouldn't have to get a white wine. And that's a fact.
So
I'm all tangled up at my...
You just need to become a more expensive date. And if you want to order Red Snapper, let him order a bottle of red wine and you get a glass of white with your meal.
It was... Well, the red wine we got was Zannon.
Yeah. And
it was served too warm.
Oh.
It wasn't too warm. It was warmer than you'd rather it have, but it wasn't piping hot. Let's just say that.
It was warm.
It didn't taste like out of the back of a car warm. It was just... It had a slight... It was slightly below room temperature, but the room temperature was, you know, it was probably about 4 or 5 degrees too warm.
And we've talked about this, folks. You know, one of the purposes of the whole corking and taste it and is it okay? If it's too warm, send it back.
And so you know what the wine guy did? We drank the entire bottle of too warm wine.
It wasn't.
He was thirsty.
It wasn't that it was too warm.
Too warm.
You got to be tolerant to a certain level. Listen,
it's just...
It wasn't Tony's Restaurante warm, okay?
One. he thinks he's in charge, but we all know he's in charge.
I don't even have to say anything, and he keeps and keeps defending it.
Yeah.
That's how you know he's wrong.
Well, he's speaking. That's how you know he's wrong.
Literally nothing. And he's like, no, but wait, it was just 5 degrees too warm.
I agree.
That's a lot.
This is where YouTube would be so much better because you could not understate Triple B's body positioning any more than it is being done, that she's taking a stance that... Rob the wine guy's in trouble, folks. That's all I got for you.
Rob the wine.
But back to Tempranillo.
And you know what I said?
What'd you say?
She said,
if you wanted to get the blackened snapper, the best entree on the menu, why don't you just order a cocktail?
No, I don't want
to. Yeah.
I don't drink.
He doesn't order cocktails with food.
I don't.
He talks to me about being pretentious. Have you ever heard something more pretentious?
No, I'm not saying other people can't do that. I don't like that.
So what?
You understand pretentious?
You didn't order the snapper?
I did.
Ah, God bless you.
I drank it with the too warm red wine.
Ah, God bless you.
If it was too cold, you would have hated it.
Next time, order white with it. Order whatever you want. Have a cocktail with it.
Yeah.
I should have ordered a gimlet.
Then do what you want. It's fine if you do that. I don't like it. It's not something that I enjoy.
Mm.
You could order a rosé to really piss him off.
And piss myself off.
Well, it's going to piss him off more.
Charles Shaw's rosé, perhaps?
No.
It's got minerality.
A French rosé.
Oh, Jesus.
But back to Tempranillo.
Yes.
Underappreciated in that it's a nice, bigger red wine that you can get for a budget entry-level price. It should be on more restaurant wine lists. It's not really often. But, yeah, that's where I'm going with it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Now on to the Triple B.
Oh. Our French audience listeners are going, you goddamn Spanish taking over. Yeah.
Underappreciated. Margot. Palm roll.
Francois.
So I was just thinking over wines that we have had recently on on the Wine Vault. And wines that I think are underappreciated because people just assume they're going to be getting a strawberry wine or a blueberry or whatever, something really syrupy and sweet. I'm going to go with the Finger Lakes because when we had the Wagner family wine, it was very, very good. It made me want to drink more from their vineyards. It made me want to drink more from that region. And I'm sure that there's a lot of stuff that's not good. I mean, I believe that. But I think that there's a lot of gems there that we could really, that we could find. And that makes me excited.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to kind of pair it off you and just say in general, I think there's some other wine regions in the United States that are underappreciated. Finger Lakes being one of them. We've had some good Virginia stuff. And on the show, we're looking forward to doing more of wines from regions that aren't Pacific Northwest, aren't Cali. And
not me.
Readers, wine producers, give us your suggestions. Give us your thoughts.
And for me,
the Derns are actually planning a trip to the Finger Lakes and are going to visit our new friends, the Wagner Family Wineries.
Yeah. We're planning to plan a trip to the Finger Lakes. We're not at the planning station. We're planning to plan. How's that? So, that's too deep for you.
Where are you headed?
This is going to be a little bit, I'll just be more obtuse.
Thank you. That's exactly what we wanted, for you
are
to
you
be more
say
obtuse.
Dry Creek?
No. Dry aromatic white wines.
Oh my god, like you're so stupid. Pick another one.
Viognier. Like Roussin. Like a lot of
Roussin.
You remember those things, Chardonnay, Rieslings, that kind of stuff, Sauvignon Blanc even gets the focus. But those really aren't the lovely drinks. We've had so many things that like Gruner Veltliner, although I wouldn't know if it's aromatic.
Well,
but,
no.
Abrinos. All those things with the Petit Mansing, really. These aromatic whites are out there. And some of these things have a little bit of weight to them that could be appealing to red wine drinkers. Think of like a white Chateauneuf. I mean, we all drink, well, we don't all drink, but we drink Chateauneuf red. But have you had a white Chateauneuf? You should try one because they're delightful.
And they're not all as expensive either.
No. Well, they're cheaper than the red variants.
Yeah,
you can still get some really classic wines.
You can get white Chateauneufs in the 20s.
Yes, you can.
Anything. A decent selection.
White Rhone wines are wonderful. They're very exciting. And, you know, hey, don't go buy the Chardonnay. Buy a Blanc from Southern Rhone. You're going to find something that's really, really neat. Really cool stuff. Those are some things. That's something that's really undervalued. I don't even ever talk about it. As a matter of fact, I just thought of it 2 seconds ago. That's how undervalued it is. I never even thought about it before until I told you right now about it. Oh my gosh, mind blown.
No, not really.
No, but I do. I actually, though, when we get the opportunity and we drink those, it's always a fun experience. Why we don't regularly drink those is question. Why don't we? Because those are nice.
Because you're both. Nails, you don't normally drink white wines.
I have been purchasing more whites. In fact, my last mass purchase for the show was 2/3 white.
Yeah, yes, it was. And
how dare you,
Rob? Were you pleased with that?
It was unusual. They are unusual wines. yes, but when you bought them, it was more. It was the cat at the computer kind of. I mean, it's like, what is this shit?
No, wine.com was having a sale.
I bet they were.
On when, white wines or what?
Everything. And it just, I went with what seemed interesting, and well, I didn't even pay attention.
What was interesting about what was interesting about a 2015 Napa Valley Sauvignon Blanc that no one's ever heard of?
Yeah.
Maybe it's the next great
because the reason was because it was Napa. That's why I bought that one. Not that that was necessarily interesting, but for the price, Napa, Sauvignon Blanc.
15...
I can't wait to try it.
Yeah, there you go. See, yeah just listen, dude. You can mock me all you want tonight. I don't think that's where you should go.
I think
you should go more for ass kissing. Just save yourself. Save your soul.
Ass.
Not my ass. My ass isn't the one you need to kiss.
Oh, she can kiss my ass. There you go. Meaner than a snake over there.
Me?
No.
Yes.
Oh my.
I was
Lord.
Meaner than a snake last night.
When?
I was so pretentious last night, Scott.
You were a little ridiculous.
It is not often that I am more pretentious than the wine guy. And whenever that role gets reversed where I'm the pretentious one, and he's like, it's not that bad.
No, I'm like,
it is hilarious. Calm How shit. Often have you ever seen that situation where yeah. I've been more pretentious than the wine guy?
Look, there is.
You did talk about
when we
a
say,
boiling cauldron with sticks and leaves in it. Or
yeah, Scott, when we say but send see, it back, there is a range that is an acceptable thing. And it's like, oh, this isn't cellar temperature. Don't be a douche.
It was warm.
They'll spit in your food. It wasn't warm.
For Becky to notice that it was
too
warm. It was
warm.
It was. Okay.
It wasn't where you wanted it to be.
But I do want to say.
It was warmer than I would drink water.
If you want the audience to
have
empathy for you, you might not mention the same night, the same story that you were being pretentious.
You were being very pretentious.
Oh, I was being pretentious. Snooty. I was also. So when we go out on date nights, they are not often. And especially with my mom breaking her leg, blah, blah, blah. We have not had very many date nights where we've actually gone out on a date. We've had, like, work events, whatever. But an actual date, it's been a minute. I was so excited. We go out. It's also, like, it was a local, like, Valentine's Day dance. So there were 400 high schoolers there.
By the way, question. Are dresses cheaper?
You sound like an old man.
The less material that is used to make them?
No.
Okay. I just want to know.
There were a lot of very small dresses.
Well, the dresses were shorter than the coats they were wearing.
You just sound like an old man.
No, he just sounds a bit creepy, too. Yes. So let's just.
I disapprove.
I told him to stop looking.
Exactly.
He was looking and scowling. At everyone walking by.
For shame. Get thee to a nunnery. Terrible. Terrible.
It's only been like that for 20 years, dude.
I know.
I don't know.
Deb's daughters went to school.
Did
with
they?
A young lady.
Okay.
Who, for prom, shows up for pictures. This is when she was a young teen. I happen to have her on my soccer team, so I know her parents.
Okay. This and they person, know, if they listen to the show, they know who their daughter is right now.
They don't listen to the show.
Maybe they've started.
This young lady showed up with a sheer dress.
What?
Sheer dress.
Sheer as in nude dress, see-through,
okay.
However you want to describe
did
it.
Did she have underwear on?
Did not wear a bra, did not wear panties. No paisleys. No nothing.
Pasties.
None of that.
Why
yeah,
did she
this
do that?
Is not quite 20 years ago, but it's different, bro. It's just different. And particularly, what you're talking about is inappropriate. There's a bit of a movement that if a young lady... chooses to dress more provocatively, it's okay because they're proud of their body, per se. Now, I don't know, you get into at what age is that appropriate and what age is it not.
Well, I think it would just be extremely cold and uncomfortable to dress like, well, yeah, actually, it's like, oh my God. I mean, if I walked outside wearing my underwear, barely, like short underwear, that's all I was wearing in a coat. I would get very cold because I would be nude from here down. That's, I mean, because, okay, I have a dress on. Yeah, but you're nude, pretty much. And that would be very cold. It was very cold yesterday, too. You're like, you know. You can't dance with that shit on, man.
It's a different world. Triple B.
You can't move.
You sound like a creepy old man.
It's just impractical.
I'm not listening.
He is a creepy old man.
There was one dude, though. He was wearing a mock turtleneck. He had his corsage on it.
By the way, I wasn't there.
You probably were hiding in the bushes or something. So, folks, we're going to take a break. And then we're going to come back. Oh, yeah, I did mine. I just forgot. Yeah. Aromatic whites. There you go. And we're going to come back with a pretentious Triple B here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So, the 2013 Chateau St. Michel Canoe Ridge Estate Merlot from Horse Heaven Hills in Washington in the United States in the Pacific Northwest in America.
America.
That's right.
One of our favorite AVAs, Horse Heaven Hills. Take another draw of this wine, guy. I think there's something in the mid palate that's expressing itself a little more, a little mocha, cappuccino-like thing that's there in the mid palate that wasn't there earlier.
Well, it's a very busy wine. It
has a lot going on.
It does. It is becoming jazzier as it opens up even more, but that's fine. I mean, that's what these wines are. That's the Horse Heaven Hills way.
And maybe jazzy's selling it short. There's a certain silkiness of the way all these things go together. There's like a silky little.
It's my lazy way of describing Horse Heaven Hills.
Blending of all these characteristics, the fruit, it's got a kiss of blueberry. There's cherry in there. Call it what you want. I said cherry cordial. What would you go with? Almost a cherry, like a cherry Coke thing. What would you go with the cherry?
Cherry cordial. But let's do this. Let's go around. Each person says a thing. Becky's been writing things down. A part of the wine, a nuance of the wine. We'll start off with the triple B.
Blueberry.
Blueberry. Scott.
The tobacco on the finish. And it appears when the wine, I don't want to say the finish is almost gone.
You just say the thing.
Tobacco, and it's on the finish.
It isn't a paragraph. It's a word.
Okay. Oh,
God.
And the mid palate.
That's three
just
words.
A word, Rob.
Yeah, just a word,
if you
Rob.
Could just
would
give
you
a
play
word,
by
please.
Your own rules, please? If you could just give a word.
We don't eat a novel.
Sausage.
Your what?
Disgusting.
There is a meaty pork meatiness on the mid palate.
It's almost like a fatty flavor.
Yeah.
The fattiness to it, and it's not dairy.
No. And I don't know that sausage completely covers it, but I just quite haven't figured out what it is yet.
Yeah,
I would say medicinal.
That medicinal thing, that anisey thing. Sure. Mm-hmm. The cherry. Cherry cordial thing. And it with the blueberry, it passes very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
There's another fruit there, too.
Plum.
Yeah. Headed towards a stewed plum.
Yeah, it's plum, yeah. It's very plummy. I didn't think that earlier, I don't know, but.
But it's because it passes so quickly.
Yeah, it does. But that's the core of that front palate is plum.
Yeah. It's there's that blueberry, cherry, and then the plum.
Little twinkles, yeah.
And the plum kind of lingers into the mid palate where the others are gone.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the acidity before the finish.
It's part of it.
It's a nice, yeah. It's a nice kiss of acidity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was it? Idiots that said nubby tannins, and I encourage our listeners go to the Urban Dictionary. I think it has the most listings for nubby of any other listing I've ever seen on the Urban Dictionary.
Not suitable for work.
No, but some of them actually aren't that unsuitable, but. That coffee cappuccino thing that's appeared late in our discussion of this wine, mid palate, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, you okay? That was what yours. And we can't ignore the forest floor. Earthiness to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is really the party piece of this wine. That's what you should focus on. You know, if you're quaffing it, you get a jazzy wine. When you're pulling air and you're really focusing on it, that's when you get the tannic woodsiness with that fatty mid palate that is so interesting.
It's not quite mushroom, but it's kind of headed that way.
It's a mossy, mushroomy quality, but it's not pungent. It's very, very soft, and it all fits within the framework. So if it were pungent and slightly off kilter, that would throw everything off, but it doesn't because the fruits are all bright. You know, you've got the plum, black currant, blueberry, all those things are woven into one another that's flowing into, you know, your. You have that little bit of a, almost a smoky, porky kind of fattiness to it that leads into the earthiness that has then the tannin and the, with that little bit of the volcanic acidity that just strokes right through it. And across all of it is that nice oakiness.
Yeah.
Which but the oakiness is oakiness elegant.
None of us listened
to
you.
Was going to be mine.
It's yours. Sure.
You take said it. More than one.
No, go ahead.
I said you're supposed nine. To be a word. Not a paragraph.
That was not. Jesus. I was giving the mosaic.
He can't even listen to his own rules.
Oakiness.
Mosaic? Spell mosaic.
F-U-C-K.
Oh, that's funny. But no, the oaking is there. It's present. It is...
K-E-Y.
The oaking adds so much depth to the wine. It is very well done.
Wine guy is douchey.
You actually rhymed that.
Mickey Mouse.
Well, I think we've covered pretty much everything.
Rob the wine guy.
I know.
Mickey Mouse.
So we're going to go to the Triple B.
Okay.
Rob the wine guy.
Who's now going to provide the review.
The review. Or my review.
Forever let if his douchiness
if run. If it's the same as mine, then it's... Are you done? Fucking child. If it matches my review, then it's the review, obviously. I think you'll be pretty accurate.
By the way, Wine Guy's using an inkjet pen. I love inkjet pens.
I know.
They're fantastic, folks.
Yeah, he gave me this jank-ass one
that
instead.
That one is jank.
Well, you can't
so,
have
I'm giving this a 91.
Hmm.
I am totally a fan. Some of the notes that I wrote down are that it's brambly. Not in a jammy grape way, but it's brambly in a like stick way that I'm a really big fan of. A woodsy way. I think it's brooding. I said that from the nose on. The exercise where we just went around and said all the flavors that we get out of the wine, it's the perfect exercise for this wine.
We got to 11 things, I think.
Yeah. There's so much depth to this wine, and there is so much to kind of find in it. It is a very broody wine. It is the perfect wine to have in front of a fireplace when there's like a thunderstorm outside. Perfect, perfect, perfect.
Oh, set the
Isn't
mood.
Isn't it a whole... I was going to say that this wine is a mood.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that.
Isn't it?
I love it.
I'm such a fan. It's woodsy. Something else that I noticed that we did... We were almost searching instead of, you know, sometimes when you're cooking dinner, then you go downstairs and find a good wine to match what you're cooking.
We did it the other way around.
This is the wine that you try to find the perfect entree for.
Yeah.
That's what we did.
Yeah, because you don't want to waste. That's mm-hmm. what we were kind of saying.
We eliminated the obvious choice, and you could put this with a steak, but it's and that's the key with pairing sometimes. It's easy to say, oh, we'll have it with a steak, but the thing we were talking about is an earthy component to your entree that you would serve with this wine would really bring out these qualities.
I think that the fatty piece of a ribeye, the grizzliness of a ribeye would be really good with it. Mm-hmm. But just going a step further into something maybe like a grilled portobello would be really nice. The other thing that I really appreciate, and you know, you all know that I'm very sensitive to oak. It is not normally my favorite thing about a wine.
I think that's changing for you.
No, I was going to say for this, I think that it was done very intentionally. They spent a lot of time and thoughtfulness surrounding how they oaked it, and it is very, very nice. It adds a lot of depth to this. It's not hiding anything. It's not the most overpowering or the main flavor of this wine. It's just something that adds to it, that it's a compliment to it. And I just think it is very, very, very well done.
And, mm-hmm. and with mostly new oak, as opposed to, you know, we talked earlier in the show about the comparison point of the Rutherford Hill Merlot, which was old oak, old French oak.
It was
used French oak. And this is, you know, it's trickier to use. Yes, French oak typically is not as harsh as American oak, but it was, what, 59% French, new French? And
yeah, yeah.
then you assume the rest was the 41% American oak. That's still a significant amount, and mm-hmm. you don't get that typical harshness of new American oak. It's really well done. Well,
I mean, you know, they're not buying barrels at the Dollar General like some of these fucking dumbasses.
Right.
Are,
so, I mean, we've certainly tasted that flavor. We certainly have.
I made this in my backyard with my blowtorch.
So I mean, seriously. Man. It's like this. We aged this in some scrap lumber we found in our backyard.
Shit, you can get barrels at Lowe's cheap. And they're like, that's American.
So normally I just go with my gut on what the score should be. But, you know, I'm going to go all wine guy here. Well, we've got a relative baseline on the Rutherford Hill. What I'm going to score this kind of based on that. And maybe I'm overscoring it a little bit. But I'm going to go 92. I think for what this is, it's fantastic.
$5 Parker's. His second wine of the night. It's a 95. I'm just
Parker,
kidding.
How dare you?
I'm just
how
kidding.
Dare you? Parker's group said, you know, 4 to 5 years, and it's this isn't a $50 bottle of wine, and we didn't play what, you know, how much would you pay for this and feel comfortable or
30?
What would you pay? Yeah. This is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 to 5 years for it. I see that. I love this wine.
I do, yeah.
Balanced. All the 11 different features, characteristics that we discernibly picked mm-hmm. out.
And none of those were us being like, oh, let me be really crazy and philosophical. Those are actual flavors that are very easy to find in the wine.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and I'm going to also point out, reviewers typically, they're sitting down, they're going to do how many ever wines, 50, 100, maybe 20, whatever. But they're doing a lot. They're taking a sip, they're writing it down, they're doing their review. This decanted. We had lively conversation. Well, Becky and I did. Rob was his typical self. Slightly less than lively.
But
because we're able to break it down over the course of time, discuss it amongst ourselves, mm-hmm. we come to this conclusion, and I just think it's a better way of reviewing wine. Not that we're better at it. 92. I'm sticking with it.
I think you have your headphones on the wrong way.
Backwards?
Yeah, I think so.
Why does it matter? It's fine. Leave me alone.
I just noticed that.
They're on her ears.
I wear them like this every single week.
Yeah, because the cords to the side where the supply comes out.
I understand that would be annoying. So, Perestroika. Apparently, I'm a little. I like borscht. What can I say? A little Russian tonight. Not too much Russian. A little Russian. I'm providing this wine 90 of my points.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Where were you at on the Rutherford Hill?
91. I like the Rutherford Hills more.
Really?
Oh, okay. That's so funny. I don't. Hey, I would pick this.
Well, unfortunately, we have no more of this, but we do have quite a bit of the Rutherford.
How much Rutherford do we have?
It's not important. It showed up. It's like it's an Irish rabbit. It just multiplies. Just saying.
How much do we have?
There's more of it available.
It's not important.
Three?
No.
Four?
No.
Five?
Yes.
No. Six?
No.
Seven?
We have two.
No, you bought more than that.
But there might be more purchased. I'm just saying.
How much is purchased?
Two, but there's still more to buy because they need a paw, so I'm going to buy them. But nevertheless, I enjoy that a little bit more because I find it's a little more simplistic than this. That, but stylistically, that's more pleasing to me. That's a stylistic choice,
you
though.
You are a simple man.
For this wine, why am I at a 90 but not a 92?
What would be the reason? Is it the tannins?
It's not the... It's
is it the finish?
Ageability.
Is it the... Oh my God.
The Rutherford Hill is no more ageable than this. You're full of shit, son.
I was going to say, is it the nubbiness? Wrong. Yeah.
No, not that no. we...
You're listen, trying to be pretentious. Listen.
Yeah, you're just trying to be... just trying to
does this show variety of character? That's so
much bullshit. Folks, you just set the grenade off, rolled in the room, and run away. Just let, watch them just blow up.
It's fucking great. But is the ageability really... That's so funny.
No, it's more of a...
What would he say? What would he be saying to us right now?
I enjoy the wine.
I'm going to drop that bomb next week.
It's just stupid.
I would have given this a better score, except for its ageability. Yeah. You know what?
No. I said that to piss you off. In reality, it is purely on stylistic preference for me.
Oh, so you Russian judged it based on your preference?
No, I'd like
you
it.
You know what? Whenever we drank all that shit that I hated, you all would never have let me score it lower that. Based off of my
there's,
stylistic
there,
preferences.
There is a subjective sure. nature mm-hmm. to sure. reviewing. Sure. I would say that I would sure. give it a range.
Sure.
I have sure. never given you a hard time about your scores on any reason.
It's a 90 for me.
I have given you a hard time before, especially when you made me drink a warm Xanon on our date night.
By the way, Robert, I agree with your 90. I gave it a 90 as well. It's a fantastic score. Triple B is the same as the wine enthusiast, and they're all a bunch of glue-huffing hippies.
Are you referring to the mother of your children as a glue-huffing hippie?
If you are giving it a 91, you are. And Scott's just, he's bought and paid for by...
Wine Spectator.
Yes, no one would give me money to review things.
We could only wish. That would just be a dream come true to be bought and paid for, wouldn't it?
Somebody slips me a $100 bill. This is a 92.
I got integrity. They can't buy me.
No.
They can't buy me or my scores.
No, it's a very good wine. By the way...
They give me samples to drink, and yeah. I'll drink them. That doesn't mean I'm giving them a good score.
This is going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And it's going up there a little bit. It got a 92. I don't disagree with your 92 or 91.
And my range would absolutely be 90 to 92. Mm. I was definitely between a 91 and a 92. And
I'm fine with Becky's 91. I was between a 90 and a 91.
Yeah. I don't mean to. I feel very much like I'm betraying you, Scott, but I was a 90, 91 also.
That's fine.
I 92, yeah. I think, is a little high.
And I said I may be overscoring it. But
oh, you are overscoring it.
But you know what
but
happens?
But I was doing your
he
thing.
He balances it out, and it's a 91, so I'm right.
But brother, I was doing your thing.
He's on defensive.
Where we just had a comparison.
I know. I did the same thing, Scott, and I prefer the Rutherford.
But you prefer
Hill.
The Rutherford, yeah. And I prefer this.
No. It is all... There are going to be people that will say this is the best wine they've ever had. There will be people, I think, that will be like, I'm okay with it. Because, think of this. Fucking... You know, you think back at, like, that Born of Fire shit. Ugh. This is much better than that.
Oh, my God.
But think of the scores for that. There are people that love that shit. But that is all the negative aspects of this wine. Mm. This one has a little bit of that jazziness, but that's all jazz. Same thing with the intrinsic stuff. All jazz. So the people that really love all the jazz, you know, it might not be enough for them. But for... people that really are looking for, quite frankly, a little bit less is more, they might find this wine to be a little bit too overripe and whatnot. Mm. I mean, I'm not necessarily agreeing with them, but they might be in an 87, 88.
The thing for me about this wine...
I just don't think it's a... It's not a... It's a 91... Put the that's it. There's no, I think it's very subjective. If you look at the actual reviews, it's between a 90 and a 92.
Yeah.
That's where we were. That's
where we were. But I'm drawn back to, you know, one of our favorite producers of one of our favorite varietals, mm-hmm. the Ravenswood County Specific Series.
Okay.
Napa, Lodi, Sonoma, Mendocino. Yeah. We love that. I'm looking forward to trying the other vineyard specific of Chateau Saint Michel.
You mean like the Cold Creek?
Cold Creek?
Because I have the Cold Creek.
Yeah.
But I have the Cabernet on the Merlot.
Chateau Saint Michel, tip of the cap.
Well, don't always tip of the cap. And by the way, I bought those wines to age. I didn't buy them for the show. I bought them from my cellar. I buy this label, this exact wine. No, I bought it in Cabernet, but I buy this wine. So it's not like I'm poo-pooing this wine. this is a good wine.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think this is, I the North Star was like 40 something regularly.
Mm-hmm.
This is just as good as that. Easily.
And what was the closeout on that?
$19.99. But this is easily as good as that. And this is, okay, you want to do Le Cole and you get into some really good stuff up in there, you're going to start kicking this thing's butt. You go into the CS, the nice CS stuff that's around 40, 50 bucks, that stuff's going to kick this thing's butt.
Yeah, but it's 40, 50 bucks.
But yeah, it is. It's double the price.
35.
And you can normally buy this in low 20s. You're not paying 26. You're probably not paying 21, 22. The value is there. It really is. It's a very strong wine. So always look for the Canoe Ridge or the Cold Creek, either one of those things, or the Indian Wells, too. We like the Indian Wells. But we gave the Indian Wells about an 88, 89. And that makes sense. Because this is bigger. It has better structure. And it's not quite as jazzy. Indian Wells, a little jazzier. We liked it, though. So this is a label. These single vineyard wines are ones you should look for, buy. And maybe you're going to drink them a little more regularly. The Cab, you can sit down for 5 to 7 years. You can do that with the Cabernet out of this area.
Bob Parker's enthusiast said 4 to 5 for this.
That's not a lot of time. No,
it's not.
He said drink now through 2022.
No, that was...
That's the Spectator, but but 4 years from when this was released is 2022. That's pretty light, but in reality, when you taste it and it's in what it is fruit-wise and things of that nature... That's the way it's meant to be drank. You don't want a leaner version of this, and I think it's going to be off kilter. Maybe not at 2022. I think it's got more than 2 years left on it. I think you could be 2024 or 2025, really, in my opinion. But it's not going to be where you want it to be at those points. I think it's going to be declining. Honestly, if I had a bottle of this, I would probably hold off for another year.
Maybe two.
Yeah, just to let it melt a little bit even more. But...
It's just really well done by, let's be honest, they're a huge producer.
Oh, they are.
Every, gross exaggeration on my part, everybody knows Chateau Saint Michel.
They do.
This is a higher quality.
Oh, it is. And with that, folks, we have a Hall of Fame, a 91 from the Triple B, a 92 from Scott, and a 90 from me. So.
Second one of the night, 98s.
Possibly. So, for Rob the Wine Guy, Scott the Unlicensed Taxi Driver, and the Triple B, we are going to see you next time and bid you adieu because I left that out here on the Wine Vault. Good night.